Welcome one and all to the greatest show in all the world. Welcome once again to Dual Wielding for the week of March the 9th, 2015. I am joined this week by Jason.
Hey, hey, we're finally living up to our show's name.
Yeah, I guess so. Two hosts. And I guess to discuss that and to kind of kick us off right where we're going to go. After this show, we're going to switch to a bi-weekly format in that we'll do this show, and then we'll do Nerds on the Rocks the alternating week, just because as I get older, my life gets busier and weirder, and it's just not really time conducive to do, let's say, about 4 hours a week of this between, like, recording it, getting everybody together, and then editing it. It's a ton of time, and I just don't have that in me anymore, or at least for right now. Who knows? Maybe we'll switch back at some point. I don't think so. I think one of the, I absolutely love everybody we work with on this show, but one of the biggest problems is also just kind of lining you all up. If you don't know, we span, I believe,
five
time
like
zones, and then nine different hours. Yeah. So it's a very tiny window in which you can actually record, and it's just a pain between, like, my life getting busy, Jason has a full-time job, Martin has a job in school, Daniel has school, Anthony has a job, and then he does stuff on the weekend. So it's always just been a real testament trying to get everybody lined up, which is why our Game of the Year stuff is always not necessarily on time, but it's also the hardest show to put together. We plan that like a month in advance just to kind of line up everybody on the same schedule. So I'm not going to say it's going to be easier getting everybody together, but just kind of not having to do it every week is just saving a ton of time. And for me personally, it also gives me a ton of time to actually just hang out with people who I don't get to see as often because of, you know, for me and for others, this is like the middle of the afternoon on most weekends, and that's usually when I would go out. I don't like going out after a certain time because it's just weird to me. I know, it's an odd concept. Anyhow, switching to bi-weekly, I don't necessarily know which is starting first, whichever one records first, so this might show up again next week, but after that, it will be every other week.
Yeah, you kind of alluded to it, but I mean, we're all just doing this in our free time for fun, so.
Yeah, I would also say that is not 100% accurate. I am almost guaranteed that we'll break the rule for E3, but that's a super special reason. And it's just so much easier to kind of, you know, like, I don't necessarily know how it works out, but it's probably easier to cover E3 if it happens to end on that week, or if you just have, you know, I still have doing the E3 prediction, so that might still be continuous shows. Other than that, though, we'll be switching to a bi-weekly format. Just getting that out there. The other reason, and this is a more minor one, but I also find that it's sometimes there isn't enough stuff to talk about in a week. We were talking about this before we began recording. There wasn't a ton of major releases this week, which when we have the show would be us talking about games we talked about last week, Pokemon Shuffle, The Order, whatever. So this way, 2 weeks, it gives you time to build up a lot of news. It gives you a ton of time to probably get in some games and stuff like that. So hopefully that will be a better format going forward, and we'll see. That said, me and Jason haven't been playing anything new, so we're just going to get into the news, which has been a pretty big week because we had both GDC and PAX this week. And PAX East, sorry. And I am so sorry for some of those people because I know people who flew from like the East Coast to GDC, which is in San Francisco, then flew back east to Boston, and then they have to go home after today. So I do not envy you. I do not envy all that traveling. It sounded like it was a ton of fun for people, but there's there. So GDC, kick it off. It's the Game Developer Conference. This year it seems to be focused on hardware, as we had several advancements in the VR tech race, I guess. We knew about Oculus Rift, and we knew about Sony's Morpheus. We had a new contender enter this week, which was Valve and HTC teaming up for the... How do you say this? VV?
Va.
Va?
I don't know. That's how I've been pronouncing it. That seems right to me. Vive. HTC Vive.
Okay, the Five. And this is a new contender for the VR helmet. This is coming from... I guess it's the second one backed by a platform holder. I mean, Valve is a platform holder at this point.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
And I think what's interesting about this one is not necessarily the tech behind it, but their pursuit of it isn't necessarily purely gaming related. I think they announced that they have teamed up with certain entertainment companies as well to provide content. And I think that is an important thing when trying to launch this technology. Well, launch any technology, you want more than just one type of entertainment. I mean, HDTV, I think video games help push that, but it also kind of helped when people started to do Blu-ray and HD DVDs, and eventually TV started to broadcast in widescreen and HD formats. And I think that helped push that forward, where I think if it was purely gaming, I see there's a market for it. I'm sure people are going to be excited for it, but I don't necessarily think you get everybody on board with that, just solely on games. So, any thoughts on this? I mean, it's really hard to talk about VR when I haven't tried any of them, so it's kind of like, oh, these are all... I mean, from what I understand, it sounds like Sony has the best tech.
Well, following the tech bump that the Morpheus just got, I think so. I know the Vive was announced first, and it was had like two 1080p screens and stuff. But then Sony came out, and the Morpheus also has now an upgraded with 1080p and 120 frames per second. I think the Vive caps out at 90. So yeah. Both of the headsets are now pretty technologically advanced. I'm not sure what the Oculus Rift's latest specs are, or if it might get another bump or something. But there's definitely, I mean, the race to consumer VR is definitely heating up. It's kind of exciting. So they're obviously, you know, they're all going to push each other further. So it's exciting.
I will say I don't necessarily understand all the tech. What I do kind of understand is like none of this sounds cheap.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
And I'm really kind of, I assume that the best tech, you know, is going to help and stuff, but I think the one that's going to get the heck off is the one that enters the market at the cheapest price. And I think even then that's still, because there's a ton of fitting costs. With the Morpheus, you need a PS4, which costs you $400.
Well, there's costs with all of these.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
They're all accessory devices. And I imagine, you know, like any new technology coming to market for the first time, it'll probably come at a premium right away and drop over time. You know, rely on early adopters to kind of push it through in the beginning. And we'll see if it takes off. It seems like, I mean, I have limited experience with VR, but it just takes getting someone to try it.
Yeah, yeah.
I think
it does well in these trade shows because a lot of people who are into it are really enthusiastic about it and wanted to try it. And I think I'm not saying that they went in with the spice. I think a lot of people are kind of skeptical, myself included, but I think they were blown away with it. I think the biggest hurdle to VR is what it brings to the table as far as an outsider goes because, I mean, not to kind of harp on this example, but look at the Wii. One of the reasons the Wii kind of took off was because it was something you can show people and they can kind of see and react and get in on the game at the same time, where VR is a very isolated experience where it's like you'd have to watch somebody enjoy it and then want to try it. It's not like you can necessarily see what they see in the VR helmet. And I think that's going to be the hurdle. I think it's going to be the same thing that we'll see at, I guess, E3 this year, if Sony has a big presence. VR is also really hard to demonstrate on stage to people watching you.
Right. Yeah, it's really a kind of tech that you need to experience for yourself.
Yeah.
So I think just, you know, having, I think last year's E3, both Morpheus and Oculus had large presences. I assume, you know, both will be the same this year, and Valve will bring theirs this year too. And I think I believe the HTC headset is only one, it's only the first of what will be a whole line of headsets. They're using like the Steam VR brand, kind of the same way they're using Steam machines, where it's more of a, I don't know how to describe it, I guess a cohesive platform almost that multiple device manufacturers can actually make their own versions of.
Speaking of Steam machines, we got updates on those at GDC. And to your point, I don't understand why we need so many manufacturers of these things. It just seems like it's going to flood the market with a device that I don't necessarily understand the audience for. I think it was announced that it's going to start launching this fall, and I believe there was something like 14 SKUs announced, ranging from $500 to $2,000. That is a wide, wide berth of devices, and that is a ton of devices. And I feel like no store is going to sell all of... I don't even know if any store would sell like three of them. Maybe one or two. It sounds like something that's going to have a very niche market in that you can probably order from Newegg or Amazon or something like that, but not something that people would necessarily want to stock in stores.
That might be. I think... I mean, obviously, Morpheus is going to have the advantage of being able to be pushed with PlayStation and is probably going to be the most affordable of the bunch, considering you're going to need a pretty beefy gaming PC to be able to run VR PC.
I was talking about the Steam machines.
Oh, right. Sorry. I mean, we'll see.
I think the biggest hurdle the Steam machines have, especially for places like GameStop, is that they don't necessarily have... that you don't necessarily get the software sales, because a lot of PC software sales come from digital, Steam, Origins,
right.
And that's... So, like, it's, you know, like, you sell Wii, you sell Xbox One, you sell a PS4, because you can push the hardware, but you can also push the games, which probably give you a bigger... Then you can push the controllers, then you can push the memory cards,
well,
or the hard drives.
You can push a lot of those things at GameStop, too. I mean, the controllers, for one. GameStop sells Steam cards right now, so, I mean...
But I feel like the people who are going to want to do this aren't the ones who are going to... Aren't the market who buys PC games in a store?
Yeah, but that's, I mean, I think that's fine. I think there is a market that they can exploit where there's people who might be willing to try PC gaming if they can get in at an affordable price and have like a pre-configured machine that they don't have to worry about some of the more tedious aspects of PC gaming.
Yeah, but I do wonder, like, if they don't want to worry about that. Like, what is that market that doesn't want to worry about the complexities of a PC but are above buying a console that pretty much does the same thing?
Well, there's games that are only on PC, just like there's games on,
I guess more I'm thinking of, like, who's that PC? Who's the people like, oh, I want to play this game on the PC, but... I just don't want to build a PC or just... Like, it's, you can probably... Like, the top-of-the-line stuff usually gets ported to consoles because it's too expensive not to. Like, yeah, you'll get stuff like League of Legends, you'll get stuff like Dota 2, you'll get stuff like World of Warcraft that hasn't made it to the consoles.
Well, then there's other stuff. There's, like, Total War and Civ, and, you know, you often get first access to indie games.
But those are... Again, you don't necessarily need a super beefy PC for that.
Well, I guess that's true, but...
I don't begrudge them. I'm extremely interested in Steam machines. I just don't see, especially at the price range, like right now the cheapest one is priced higher than any console, and you could probably build a comparable PC for around the same price as the cheapest ones, or the mid-tier ones. So, I mean, we'll see. I was just curious. You also mentioned the Steam controller, which... It's a device that exists. I don't necessarily get if it's a device people want, but it exists.
The controller, I have a tough time kind of seeing the target audience. I mean, Valve, I think, has a better pulse on it than anybody, but if you like mouse and keyboard... I can't see you gravitating towards this controller, and certainly as someone who prefers controllers, I don't really want to use like a trackpad-based controller. So I don't know. I'm curious to see how it does, since it is so different, but, you know, we'll see.
I feel like a lot of these decisions are trying to cater to the console market, but I don't necessarily know if the console market, it doesn't seem like the console market hates itself enough to switch. Like, it's like, oh man, these consoles are so terrible, let me go to PC gaming, and then kind of get the same headaches, because you don't you still get all the patches and the healthy DLC, and the wonky controllers. I mean, you get cheaper games, because Steam has amazing sales. So I guess that's one huge benefit.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, but you're seeing that more and more on the console platforms as well.
Yeah, and that's, I mean, I don't necessarily see the cross section. I'm curious to see what this looks like in about a year when we get first sales and stuff like that. Especially being like I said, I just don't see a lot of stores stocking up many of these. I assume they'll do the cheap ones, and the other ones will probably be custom ordered. So we'll see how it all shakes out. You also mentioned the Steam Link, which I believe is the fancy, you can play games on your TV from your computer.
Yeah.
Which is,
it's basically like PlayStation TV for Steam.
Yeah. Or, I have kind of the transition to our next, it's kind of like the NVIDIA Shield was sold as. Where that was that was allowing you to stream to a handheld device from your PC, and that went nowhere. And because it went nowhere, they decided to double down on that and make a console now, which I'm sure a ton of people are excited for. Don't shout your excitement
too much. I mean, I don't know. I didn't really like the original one that much, so I don't know. I mean, Android gaming.
Yeah, I mean, Android gaming has some potential, and I don't think this is on our
notes.
Does
it though, as a TV device?
Here's the thing, and this is what has confused me, and I guess there's no way around it. I was excited for the Amazon console because I thought they'd make something cheap and affordable that was decently powered, that you could kind of be like your all-in-one on-top device. And they didn't do that, and that seems to be the same problem everybody seems to be making. It's like, nobody wants a Android console that costs more than, like, $100. Like, it's a cheap alternative. It's like, okay, I want an Apple TV, I want a game console, let me get something reasonable. Like, I think if you could find something that could run this for about $75, $80, it would have a decent market. I think over 100, you're kind of going into the space of, like, I might as well get an actual system with actual games. And I think the big thing is a lot of them don't launch with necessary original games. Like, Amazon just announced their first two, I think, their first two exclusive games for the Fire Stick TV. And that is, they're doing, like, a horror game and I think a point-and-click adventure title or something like that. So it's an interesting thing. I feel like it's like NVIDIA's like, we need something. We've been supplying these people with graphic cards for all these years or whatever. And it's probably not a market that they necessarily can compete in, but they need to try something to keep their business relevant. So yeah, super, super exciting about hardware this year. I guess this is a much more current and something that's going to happen sooner announcement is we also found out that Rock Band 4 is official. And that will be, I don't think they said it. Did they say it's out this year?
Yeah.
Okay. It's announced for the Xbox One and the PS4. It will be compatible with your old instruments? Or, I see.
They said they're working on it. I believe the exact quote was something like, we're working closely with Sony and Microsoft to find a way, but right now they have nothing to promise.
And this is the part that's really exciting, is they announced that it would be a service platform. It won't be a yearly update. It's going to be a device that you buy once, and then you kind of buy games for as needed. And I think that's what they need to do with the first, not necessarily the first one, but I think after a while that should have been what Rock Band and Guitar Hero became, and not expect people to buy new instruments every year.
I mean, they kind of did that in a way. I mean,
after the marketing imploded.
Well, even before that, though, because even though they did release new games and new instruments, all the songs worked across all the games.
I thought they were
until 3, I guess,
when
they added the promo.
I was upset that they were only forward compatible.
Between 1 and 2, they were completely cross-compatible. So it was because 3 added the keyboard and the pro mode and stuff. Those songs were not backwards compatible. But for a long time, Rock Band very much was a platform that was supplemented with these releases that tweaked the formula. But yeah, it sounds like they just want to do the one game, which I think is really smart.
And it doesn't necessarily, I mean, they don't necessarily, it doesn't have to be one game, but it doesn't have, it shouldn't be, like, maybe in 3 years they come out, they improve it, and, you know, they want to do something else. That's fine, but not every year, not every 6 months, or anything like that.
I think they learned their, or I hope they learned their lesson from last
year.
I also
feel like Harmonix isn't in the position they were last gen, when they could have released these games that, I mean, part of the reasons that this is only on Xbox 4, well, Xbox One and PS4, not Wii U, not PC, none of the old systems, is because they said that they already have the pipeline for these two consoles, and it makes sense in the fact that the consoles are probably the strongest for DLC sales. So yeah, I'm not necessarily excited for it. I earned my S, and I'm not going to buy it. It's something that's amazing at other people's house when I don't have to keep the instruments. But it's always fun to have music games back. On that same note, we kind of made fun of this last week, but it was just announced at PAX East that Dance Central Spotlight will be getting Borderlands characters, including Claptrap. So that's a fun little corporate synergy thing. Any thoughts on that?
No, I have the same kind of opinion, I guess. It's a fun little...
Yeah.
It's cool. Like, it's cool.
I also think it's free, so that's a positive, always. I guess the other big war, we had the war of the VR helmets, we had the war of the Steam machines. The other big war of the week was free engines for all. Unreal announced that Unreal Engine 4 would be free to use. Mm-hmm. It's free to use, and then what, 5% of your revenue after, like, $3,000?
Yes. UE4. Yeah, it's free. You can download it right now. You can also download Unreal Tournament. It's also part of that. So that's an interesting model they're taking with that game. It's almost like Unreal Tournament is like a vehicle to push Unreal Engine 4.
Which is kind of the point. I mean, yeah. Gears of War was the Unreal Engine, so last gen. This time it makes sense to kind of do this tournament. You need something to showcase.
Yeah, I mean, it's obviously a really popular engine. But I think the main takeaway is, like, the barriers are continuing to be removed for people to create games, and that's going to be an awesome thing, and it's a great thing for just the industry and the medium in general.
Yeah, I would also say that I think 5% is a drop in the bucket.
Yeah, I think that's, like,
more than reasonable.
Yeah, I think Epic could have extracted more than that if they wanted to. So
I mean,
5% is really, I mean, they're really banking on just everyone jumping on this and pushing out games, and they'll take a totally reasonable cut, you know, like, that's awesome.
Yeah, and it's 5% after a certain amount you earn, so if your game does, it's not like you, oh man, I only made like 2,000, it's not, they're not going to take that from you, which is great, because, you know, some games come out and they sell like 5 copies and whatever, so that's awesome. I mean, I hate to be one of the greedy publishers, but I honestly would have asked like 10 or 15% myself. Maybe 20.
Yeah, I think I probably would have said 10% also. I think, what, Apple takes like 30%, I believe? I mean, it's different. That's publishing, but...
Yeah, Apple takes 30%.
So,
and Google, and I think Google takes 50% off of YouTube revenue, and they don't even do anything. So.
Wow. Yeah, so, I mean, I think it's totally reasonable. It's really cool.
And then Valve announced that Source Engine 2 is also going to be free. And I don't know any of the exact details for this one. I think somebody said you can publish straight to Steam. Well, as far as, like, I assume you still have to go through, like, Steam Greenlight and stuff like that. But for a, you know, a tiny developer making games for PC, that's a great little thing. And this joins, what is the other engine that's free right now? Unity.
Unity, I thought, isn't free.
I thought Unity was free. Anyhow, we'll come to that later on or whatever.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's an exciting time, like you said. I think it's the barrier to entry. It's going to be like writing a book soon. Anybody can write a book. Not necessarily anybody can get published, or would anybody buy the book, but anybody can write a book.
Yeah.
So it's going to get to the point where anybody can make a game. It doesn't mean it's going to be a successful game. It doesn't mean it's going to be a good game.
No, but everyone has to start somewhere.
Yeah.
It's like we're away from the days where, you know, 10 years ago even, certainly 20 years ago, you had to be working for a big company to do this. I mean, you had to have a publisher, you know, you had to go through all these channels, and there's just, the tools are there. You can download it right now, you know, start messing around. You can self-publish, you know, like there's so little you need to make games now, and that's just an amazing thing.
All you need is an imagination. Imagination. And I believe Jason says he's going to mess around with these, so I expect to see some fun write-ups on that.
Yeah, I did. I downloaded Unreal 4. I'll probably start with that, so.
Yeah, so we'll have more of that in the future, I guess. Okay, we're going to get into that really funky phase now where we talk about games or things that came out this week that I don't necessarily know the details on. I just kind of picked it up in the peripheral. I think the biggest one was last night, Saturday night, Square announced, they kind of showed more Final Fantasy 15, and part of this was a buddy system. And it sounds like it's kind of their WG connected thing, where I guess people can give you missions to do. I don't know if that's in-game or if it's like, you know, kind of like a always online, oh, like my friend's doing this, I can help them out by completing this mission and helping them out type dealio.
Yeah, I honestly didn't really announce or understand what it was. So.
Yeah, I like I said, I always saw this kind of in the background, and I'm kind of interested in Final Fantasy 15, but I'm interested in the point where I don't want to find out stuff before it turns me off, because right now it seems like a really interesting RPG. It seems like a buddy movie road trip, where you and your three friends drive around town, fight monsters, save princesses, and all that other stuff. It's a very novel concept for an RPG. Or for a video game in general. I don't think we've ever really done a road trip game.
Yeah, especially for it being a like Final Fantasy game, it's kind of a funny mix. But
yeah, that's actually a good point. I do hope that they can deliver on the humor. I assume they'll have a top-notch company working on the dialogue and stuff like that. But yeah, I think trying to take a buddy road trip game too serious may be detrimental. I understand that Final Fantasy needs its elements of seriousness, but I do think it needs a ton of humor as well to balance that out.
Sure, sure. I think, you know, I'll be definitely interested to wait and see. I have a question for you. Do you think it'll come out this year?
No.
I don't think so either.
I don't think so. Do you know what is coming out this year?
What's that?
Metal Gear Solid 5.
Oh, that is. Good segue.
That was announced this week for a release of September 1st, and it has one of the most insane collector's editions I've ever seen, because you can actually buy a robotic arm. I should say the robotic arm is included. You don't buy the robotic arm, of course. But yes, they also announced a limited edition PS4, which looks really nice. So yeah, it's out September, which kind of sucked for, well, not sucked, but I think Mad Max was announced for a release that same week, like September 4th or something like that. So, you know, I feel like Mad Max is going to be an interesting one. I don't necessarily think it's a big franchise that people know, and it's so far removed from the movie, which is out in May. But it sounds like an interesting game. We got first details on that, but I'd rather wait until we actually see gameplay of that.
Yeah. Yeah, it is weird. We haven't really seen anything about it.
Yeah, and it's out in like half a year.
Yeah.
But, I mean, at the same time, it does seem to be... That's kind of what Warner Brothers does. Because, I mean, we haven't seen a... We've seen trailers for Batman, but they haven't... Like, even with Arkham Asylum, they didn't do a ton of stuff. They did the demo a few weeks beforehand. But, like, leading up to it, there wasn't a ton of gameplay shown. And even, like, they didn't do Shadow of Mordor. There wasn't a ton of, like, stuff out there. And even the review copies came relatively... I mean, it came before the game, but it was a really, really subdued type of experience. So I'm curious to see how that all shakes out. But yeah, Metal Gear Solid 5, The Phantom Pain. I think a lot of people took a bit of disdain with Kojima saying that Snake would not be speaking a ton in this game. Or he's going to be closer to a silent protagonist.
Which is funny, because they made such a big deal about Kiefer Sutherland.
And I think that's why people are upset. It's like, if you were going to recast him, why keep him quiet or not make him speak as much? It could just be that Kiefer was really expensive. he's a TV star, a sometimes movie star. I think the other thing is that people, I mean, Metal Gear has always kind of been driven by story, so I think people are kind of odd, weirded out by the fact that you're going to turn your hero, not necessarily son, he's going to speak, but he won't speak as much.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll see. And to just kind of continue this running joke, apparently, Kojima also announced that this would be his final Metal Gear Solid game. So if you're keeping track at home, that means he's announced that for Metal Gear Solid 2, 3, 4, and now 5. But he's consistent.
Sure. it's becoming one of those just broken record type things. It's funny to hear him every time.
Every time. And the funny thing is, like, I think it was Kotaku who put up an article showing every time he said this would be his final Metal Gear game. And I think even he noted at some point, like, I've said this before, I know, but this time I really mean it. And then he ends up making a game and making it the next one anyhow. So, we'll see. We'll see. The other thing that came out this week was the Nintendo held a Xenoblade Chronicle X Direct, which was focused on the gameplay engine, the Battle Combat. And I think if you've played Xenoblade Chronicles, this is a system that is very familiar to you. You pretty much auto attack, and you have arts that have certain cooldown, and based on where you're positioned, they can do extra damage and stuff like that. Enemies have different states, enemies have different alertness. Some enemies will engage you in combat if they see you, some enemies will engage you in combat if you run past them, some enemies will, if you make any sounds, some enemies will fight in hordes. It's like, if you start attacking one, they'll call for support, and all of this is kind of visually depicted to you based on the little icons near their names. You know, stronger enemies will take you out faster. Anything that, if you've played, you know, Xenoblade Chronicles, you probably have an idea of how this battle system works. It doesn't seem to be... It's an evolutionary system. They replaced the party gauge with a soul search, well, a soul gauge or something like that, and it's pretty much the same thing. It just seems to go up the fat better when you do continuous, using the similar arts in rapid succession instead of mixing it up. So, you know, it's going to add an element of strategy. And it ended with a big tease as to what's going to happen with, I guess, the dolls or the mechas, whatever you want to call them, for the next one. I thought that this was, I think, and I'm assuming they're going to dub this in English when they're doing the American release, I think these directs have been a really interesting way of trying to sell an RPG. Because I think RPGs have always kind of been a really dense and hard game to sell. Like, it's been the problem with ETH, showing them, you know, on-stage demos, or even, like, demos of RPGs are always really difficult to showcase. But dividing it up into, like, what I imagine right now are 3 30-minute things focused on characters and the world, and then one focused on gameplay and the battles, and then one focused on the special systems. I think it's been an interesting way, and they've included a sense of humor to kind of make it easy digestible for people. So I think it's been an interesting thing to watch. I'm curious to see what happens when they dub this in English, and if they keep all that humor and charm with it as well. Sticking with Wii U news, because, let's be honest, Nintendo doesn't get a ton of positive news these days. I don't even think we mentioned this when it was announced, but Rodan the Sky Soldier, which was originally a Wii game that was supposed to come out in 2009, 2010, and got ported over to the Wii U and 3DS, is coming stateside this year. And we knew about the Wii U and 3DS version. It came out this week that the Wii U version first run would also include the Wii version. And they're similar games, but based because of the control setups, the Wii U and 3DS are touch-based, and the Wii one is motion-controlled. And because of that, they have different setups for how combat and traversal works. So it's similar games, but it won't be the same exact experience twice for people worried about that.
I've never played that game, so I've never heard of it.
Yeah, I'm a huge fan of colorful platformers, so it was on my radar, and then it's from Yuji Naka, the guy who did Sonic the Hedgehog, which is why people were excited for it. And it was they competed, and then the company shelved it, and it's been sitting kind of there forever, and now it's finally coming out. It's not even out in Japan yet either. I mean, it could end up being a completely awful game. That's always a risk you take. It also came out this week that Shovel Knight will be coming to Xbox One, and much like the PS4 version, which is getting an exclusive Kratos fight, the Shovel Knight on Xbox One will be getting an exclusive fight with Battletoads.
Apparently Shovel Knight is the Soul Calibur 2 of this generation.
Except for the console that it debuted on. I don't think there's any Nintendo exclusive content yet. But, I mean, at the same time, you can also say that Nintendo fans got almost a year-long exclusivity on it. So, you win some, you lose some. It's an amazing game on any system. I'm just happy more people get to experience it. Speaking of new old games, I guess, Wolfenstein The Old Blood was announced, a standalone prequel to the Wolfenstein The New Order from last year. And I think we said similar stuff when it came to Far Cry Blood Dragon, but I think this is the type of DLC that people were excited for when DLC was becoming a thing last gen, is this expansion packs, essentially.
Yeah, standalone expansion packs, even better.
Yes.
We've seen a couple of these, Assassin's Creed Freedom Cry, which was DLC for 4, standalone. Far Cry 3 Blood Dragon.
I mean, GTA was the first to really do it with, like, the Battle of Gay Tony.
And
the Austin the Damned and stuff like that. I think Red Dead Redemption had the zombie outlaw stuff. So, yeah, it's a great avenue, I think, to... And I think the biggest boon to it, the biggest positive, if done correctly, is the fact that it allows you to continue making content for this game without putting out a new one. And I feel like people won't get tired of something if it's like, oh, yes, it's more Wolfenstein, but here it's just a tiny piece of it. Instead of like, oh, here's more Wolfenstein as a $60 box product. And then you can do a bigger Wolfenstein next year or the year after that.
Yep.
Yeah, so that's all exciting and stuff like that. Is there any other news you want to talk about before we hit to the big story of the week?
No, we covered pretty much everything on my list.
Okay. So the big story of the week is EA kills Don Maxis, the makers of The Sims and SimCity. And, you know, I think you said this, and the writing was kind of on the wall once since SimCity 4 kind of didn't do too hot. It's to be expected. It's disappointing because they were one of the older companies in the industry, and there aren't a ton of them left anymore.
Yeah.
I mean, mostly, especially if you, it's mostly the Japanese companies, Rare. And I'm sure there's others, but there aren't a ton of them.
Of some of the companies. Yeah, well, I mean, the thing with Maxis is they're just not relevant anymore. I mean, they totally bungled their last major launch. Of course, the SimCity reboot. I don't believe they're in charge of The Sims.
I think that's
a different studio, and The Sims is now the bigger or the biggest piece of that franchise. So.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like, I mean, it depends. Like, how much of it is on them, and how much of it is on EA's hand in of what they should and shouldn't have done with SimCity. Because a lot of the stuff that came out of SimCity wasn't necessarily that it was a terrible game. It was kind of how it was designed to kind of always be online. And I don't necessarily know if that was their decision.
Well, that may or may not be true, but, you know, it's kind of doesn't matter. Because they didn't pull it off.
Yeah, they didn't pull it off, and it sucks. But yeah, it's just, I think it's just sad for a lot of people that one of these big companies has kind of gone away. And I know you kind of disagree with this. I also think a lot of people just kind of see it as a curse of EA, who have closed down like close to a dozen companies that they've purchased. Or, like, they've purchased them and kind of gutted the talent. We've seen that before, and we'll probably see that again.
So, I mean, certainly EA has done that. I think when we were talking about it, you know, like, yeah, they closed down Maxis, and they bought them at some point, but at the same time, Maxis has been around for decades under EA's control.
Yeah.
Like, most studios they've shut down weren't doing... you know, weren't being successful. So it's not like they're shutting down DICE or BioWare. So the one that in that list that kind of raises the eyebrows, Pandemic, because they did make good games or games that sold well, and they only closed down a year after EA bought them. But at the same time, you could argue like that was a package deal with BioWare. Maybe BioWare is just what they really wanted, and they didn't really value Pandemic, which... but it wasn't like they could just buy one and not the other.
I mean, ultimately, I do think it does. I mean, and it's a hard thing to say. I know there's this. I don't necessarily hate EA the way people hate EA. EA is a business, and sometimes what people do for business isn't necessarily what consumers consider right. But it, at the end of the day, any business operates to make money. But I do think that it just shows they don't value their companies, and that's not necessarily a bad thing. Because a company is, as good as its performance. Like you said, like if you're making us money, if you're making these great new games, we'll continue to support you. If not, what is your value to us?
Right.
Like, they own the Sims brand. They don't need Maxis for that. The same way that, you know, they did the Dungeon Keeper reboot. People hated that, but it was their IP to screw around with. And it's not like if they get... I think ultimately the biggest thing is to get rewarded for it. They don't. It's not like they lose money. It's not like they lose support. Their games continue to sell well, and they can play around with these companies because they don't need them. If Madden imploded, if FIFA imploded, they might have some concern. But yeah, if you know, The Sims isn't a company; it's a brand.
Right.
And they can continue. They can make it a mobile thing. They can port. Oh, there's a ton of stuff they can do with it.
Yeah, I don't think the end of Maxis is by any means, you know, the end of Sims properties.
I mean, it's not even technically the end of Maxis. Even though this is the Maxis, EA also has a couple of other companies with the same kind of title. So it's kind of like, oh yeah. So we'll continue with this brand. It's just like this company itself won't exist. Yeah, I mean, it's just one of those things. At this point, it's kind of cold, but we've gotten used to it. We've seen so many companies, big, small, you know, anything in between, close down, gut their employees. It's becoming old hat. It's depressing to see, but you can only be depressed so often when you see it. It's like, this is... the standard order of the business. It's not an EA thing. It's not an Activision thing. It's a thing. Because it's a big business, and at the end of the day, if you're not making money, there's no purpose of you of people pouring money into you.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I think that's that for this week. I guess there's anything we might have missed, or any games you want to talk about, or anything you want to sing about.
No, I mean, there's it was definitely a big week with those two conventions you mentioned, and we're about to start hitting the stride of the spring releases, so.
It's an odd stride, but it's a stride. It's better. It's going to be better than the past 6 months or so, I think. But it's a very. It's like it starts, it stops, it starts, it stops. Because we have it. We've mentioned we have Bloodborne, we have Battlefield Hardline, we have Mario Party 10, we have Codename Steam this month, and then there's nothing for a few weeks in April, and then you have Mortal Kombat 10. Then there's nothing for a few weeks until The Witcher 3 in May. Then there's nothing in a few weeks until Batman. But, I mean, most of those games are Sonic Media experiences, so you'll have plenty of time to finish them until the next game comes out. And as we learned from Sony, Microsoft, and Nintendo this week, there are also a ton of great indie games coming out to all of their platforms in the next couple of weeks. And some of them even came with release dates for once.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes. So for Jason and myself, this has been Dual Wielding. We'll see you in either a week or two. Who knows?